So Psalm 102, according to the scholars, the psalm offers us waves of lyrical poetry of excellent quality. Now I believe them. Jerusalem is in ruins, but the enemies of whom the psalmist speaks The enemies of whom the psalmist speaks are personal rather than national. The personal suffering is experienced as part of the national suffering for Zion and as a moment in a continuing history of suffering. So his own personal suffering he sees as symbolic or typical of the suffering of the people. The threat of premature death in midlife is seen against the eternity of God. And we might compare the lament of Hezekiah, which we find in the book of Isaiah 38. I said in the noontide of my days, I must depart. So he's middle-aged, 35, 36, or whatever it would be in his time, 40 perhaps. In the noontide of my days, I must depart. I'm consigned to the gates of Sheol, the underworld, for the rest of my years. I said, I shall not see Yahweh in the land of the living. I shall look upon mortal human beings no more among the inhabitants of the world. My dwelling is plucked up and removed from me like a shepherd's tent. Like a weaver, I've rolled up my life. He cuts me off from the loom. From day to night, you bring me to an end. The psalm moves between the individual and the community. As Christians, when we read Rebuild Zion, we might think of the call to rebuild the church, a call that was experienced by St. Francis of Assisi, for example, and to which he responded with amazing generosity. We're all called to play our part in this. Rebuild the city of God, rebuild the community, rebuild the world. The title of this psalm reads, A Prayer of One Afflicted with faint and pleading before Yahweh. Very personal psalm. If your health isn't good and you feel you're in the noontide of your days, this is the psalm for you. Hear my prayer, Yahweh. Let my cry for help come to you. Do not hide your face. Do not hide your face from me in my distress. Listen to me. Answer me speedily when I call. For my days pass away like smoke, and my bones burn like a furnace. My heart is stricken and withered like grass. I'm too wasted to eat my bread. Because of my loud groaning, I'm all skin and bone. I'm like an owl in the wilderness, like a young owl in a place of devastation. I lie awake. I'm like a solitary bird on the rooftop. Comment, the owl was considered unclean, and its presence and sound an ill omen. The wilderness suggests exile, a place of devastation suggests Jerusalem in ruins. I read from Isaiah chapter 13. It will never be inhabited or lived in for all generations. Arabs will not pitch their tents there. Shepherds will not make their flocks lie down there. Wild animals will lie down there, and its houses will be full of howling creatures. There ostriches will live. There goat demons will dance. Hyenas will cry in its towers, and jackals in the pleasant palaces. Its time is close at hand. Its days will not be prolonged. and a bit later in Isaiah, thorns shall grow over its strongholds, nettles and thistles in its fortresses. It shall be the haunt of jackals, an abode for ostriches. Wild cats will meet with hyenas, goat demons shall call to each other. There too Lilith shall repose. And Lilith, the scholars tell me, is a mythological female demon who haunted ruins. If you're male, you don't have to think of your wife or anything. There too Lilith shall repose and find a place to rest. There shall the owl nest and lay and hatch and brood in its shadow. There too the buzzard shall gather, each one with its mate. So there's going to be more buzzards coming later. And if you want to read Job chapter 19, I had planned to read it to you today, but I won't now. Job chapter 19 is a long chapter, similarly talking about this situation. So back to our psalm, verse 8. All day long my enemies taunt me. Those who deride me curse me by name. I eat ashes for bread and mingle tears with my drink. Because of your indignation and anger, for you've lifted me up and thrown me aside. It's a very real poem, isn't it? Psalm 90, you might recall here, because they presumed if anything was going wrong, God must be angry with them. That's the logic again. It's a terrible logic. And once we see Jesus dying on a cross, that logic is just shattered. We realize that suffering is not something planned by God or predestined by God or inflicted by God at all. We have to look closer at hand for the reasons why we suffer. We are consumed by your anger, says Psalm 90. By your wrath we are overwhelmed. You've set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. So as with all of us, he thinks when things are going wrong that the sins that he doesn't tell anyone about that he's committed, they're coming back to bite him now. God knows, so God is punishing for what we did in our youth or whatever. For all our days pass away under your wrath, our years come to an end like a sigh. The days of our life are 70 years, or perhaps 80 if we're strong. Even then their span is only toil and trouble. They're soon gone and we fly away. Who considers the power of your anger? Your wrath is as great as the fear that is due you. And also as a commentary, Job 30 reads, you lift me up on the wind. You make me ride on it, and you toss me about in the roar of the storm. So back to our psalm, verse 11. My days are like a lengthening shadow. I wither away like grass. But you, Yahweh, reign forever. Your name endures from one generation to the next. We're mortal, but Yahweh is immortal, and it's Yahweh with it we place our hope in. Some other readings from the Old Testament literature that might pick up the same theme. Psalm 109, I'm gone like a shadow at evening. Job chapter 8, where but of yesterday we know nothing. Our days on earth are but a shadow. And again, Job 14. A human being born of woman, few of days and full of trouble, comes up like a flower and withers, flees like a shadow and doesn't last. And Isaiah 37. They've become like plants of the field, like tender grass. Like grass on the housetops, blighted before it is grown. The heat of the sun hits it and it withers. Verse 13 of our psalm. You will rise up and have compassion on Zion. Zion is the name given to Jerusalem from the point of view of the place where the temple is and where the Davidic dynasty reigns. So it's got a religious and political connotation rather than Jerusalem, which is the physical city, without any particular connotation. So you'll rise up and have compassion on Zion, for it is time to favour it with your grace. The appointed time has come. So he is now connecting his own personal suffering with the suffering of the city, and the third lamentation does this in a similar way from the book of Lamentations, chapter 3, giving you various verses here just for your reflection. He's made my flesh and skin waste away, he's broken my bones. Though I call and cry for help, he shuts out my prayer. The steadfast love of Yahweh never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. You have wrapped yourself with anger and pursued us, killing without pity. My eyes flow with rivers of tears because of the destruction of my people. Until Yahweh from heaven looks down and sees. You've heard their taunts, Yahweh, all their plots against me. And Isaiah, ah, you who say, let him make haste, let him speed his work that we may see it. Let the plan of the Holy One of Israel hasten to fulfillment that we may know it, longing for God to declare his hand. Psalm 75, at the set time that I appoint, I will judge with equity. God's time. Habakkuk, the prophet. There is still a vision for the appointed time. It speaks of the end and does not lie. If it seems to tarry, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. God's will be done, kind of thing. And finally, Isaiah 49. Thus says Yahweh, in a time of favor I have answered you, on a day of salvation I have helped you. And so we come back to our psalm now, verse 14, speaking of the city. Your servants hold its stones dear, and have pity even for its dust. The nations will fear the name of Yahweh, and all the kings of the earth your glory. Ezekiel, the priest writing in exile, the temple having been destroyed, writes, my sanctuary, God speaking, the pride of your power, the delight of your eyes and your heart's desire, loves the temple. And Isaiah 59, those in the west shall fear the name of Yahweh, those in the east his glory, for he will come like a pent-up stream that the wind of Yahweh drives on. Verse 16 of our Psalm 102 reads, when Yahweh builds up Zion, city, and appears in his glory. The psalmist is confident that God will have compassion on the city and will rebuild it. And again, I hope I'm not giving you too many comments from other places, but just to get the, I suppose, pick up the feel of the psalm, which is all over the place in the sacred scriptures. From Ezekiel, the prophet again. On the day that I cleanse you from all your iniquities, I will cause the towns to be inhabited and the waste places shall be rebuilt. Then the nations that are left all around you shall know that I, Yahweh, have rebuilt the ruined places and replanted that which was desolate. I, Yahweh, have spoken, and I will do it. Isaiah 54. O afflicted one, storm-tossed, not comforted, I am about to set your stones in antimony and lay your foundations with sapphires. I will make your pinnacles of rubies, your gates of jewels, and all your walls of precious stones. If you're familiar with the book of Revelations, that's picked up there in the New Jerusalem imagery. And Amos, on that day I will raise up the booth of David that is fallen. I will repair its breaches and raise up its ruins and rebuild it as in the days of old. So hanging on to those promises, our psalmist is believing that this desolate city will be renewed by God. Verse 17. So verse 16 read, when Yahweh builds up Zion and appears in glory, when that happens, this will happen, he will turn to the prayer of the destitute and will not despise their plea. Let this be recorded for a future generation, so that a people yet unborn may praise Yahweh. Traditions handed on orally before they're recorded in writing. Psalm 78, things that we've heard and known, things that our ancestors have told us. We will not hide them from their children. We will tell to the coming generations the glorious deeds of Yahweh and his might and the wonders that he has done. So all you parents and catechists, that's what we're doing. Isaiah 30 reads, go now, write it before them on a tablet, inscribe it in a book, that it may be for the time to come as a witness forever. Verse 19, he looked down from his holy height. From heaven, Yahweh observed the earth to hear the groans of the prisoners and to set free those condemned to die. Isaiah 49 reads, Yahweh says to the prisoners, come out. And to those in darkness, show yourselves. You might recall Lazarus, come forth from the tomb, you know. Isaiah 61, he has sent me to proclaim liberty to captives and release to the prisoners. The quotation that is placed on the lips of Jesus by Luke in the first beginnings of his public ministry in Nazareth, when he rolled up the scroll to find this particular text. That's what Jesus saw himself as coming to do. Proclaim liberty to people who are trapped, captive, and released, to we who are prisoners of what? Culture, habit, sin, whatever. Zechariah, I will set your prisoners free from the waterless pit. I will return to your stronghold. No, then the command, return to your stronghold, prisoners of hope. Thus, now our psalmist says, verse 21, thus the reputation of Yahweh will spread throughout Zion and his praise in Jerusalem, when peoples and kingdoms gather together to worship Yahweh. When this time comes, and again, different texts, Isaiah chapter 2, in the days to come, the mountain of Yahweh's house shall be established as the highest of the mountains and shall be raised above the hills, and all nations shall stream to it. Many people shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of the God of Jacob. And Zephaniah, all the peoples may call on the name of Yahweh and serve him with one accord. From beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, my suppliants, my scattered ones, shall bring my offering. And Isaiah, I'm coming to gather all nations and tongues, and they shall come and see my glory. And as our psalm gathers to the close, I'll just read it. Gets back very personal again to this person in midlife who's facing death. Verse 23, he has broken my strength in mid-course and shortened my days. Oh my God, I say, do not take me away at the midpoint of my life, you whose years endure through all generations. Long ago you laid the foundations of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you endure. They will all wear out like a garment. You change them like clothing, and they pass away. But you are the same, and your years have no end. And I just note here that last section, long ago you laid the foundations of the earth, and then finishing up, you're the same, that's used in the letter to the Hebrews, chapter 1, verse 10, applying it to the risen Christ. Now, having died and taken into the mystery of God, you are the same, your years have no end. He's in the eternal joy of the communion with God. And our psalm concludes, the children of your servants and their offspring will live in security in your presence. And I conclude with a statement from Isaiah, the prophet's last chapter of the prophecy of Isaiah, chapter 66. As the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, says Yahweh, so shall your descendants and your name remain. So that the scholars tell me it's a beautiful poem, a lyric poem, applying to a very real human situation and moving from the pain of the city to their own personal pain of the king who's facing death in midlife.